The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
After spending almost 15 years in prison for the Guildford pub bombings of 1974, the Guildford Four were released in 1989, in no small part thanks to the efforts of a solicitor, Alistair Logan. Alistair took on the case of one of the four, Paddy Armstrong, after a request for legal aid, and he worked with Armstrong throughout his release process and afterwards. The life of Paddy Armstrong is chronicled in a one-man show at the Pavilion Theatre called Paddy, The Life and Times of Paddy Armstrong, starring Don Witcherly. And after next Saturday night's show, there'll be a Q&A which will feature that English solicitor, Alistair Logan. Well, Alistair joined us before we came on air, and I started by asking him about the decision to take the Paddy Armstrong case, which for an English solicitor would not have been a popular thing to do.
Well, you're right about that, but I have to confess that initially when I was asked to do it, I refused because I was a one-man band. I was a sole practitioner and I felt the case was too big for me. But they came back to me at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and said no one would take the case and asked me if I would reconsider. So I said yes, and I got Patrick Armstrong, capital A, top of the list.
Now, talk to me about the kind of solicitor you were at the time before you got involved in this. What kind of law practice did you have?
I had a general high street practice. I was doing principally crime, matrimonial, and a lot of other general work, including conveyancing.
So getting involved in criminal defence was not your bread and butter by any means?
No, and most of the cases I dealt with in crime were very small in, you know, small cases in the magistrates' court. We did have cases that went to the Crown Court, but nothing of this size.
Now, solicitors and barristers are supposed to take a very neutral view of their job. They're supposed to defend if the client needs defence and prosecute if that is appropriate for the client. Did you have any preconceptions after the horrendous bombings in Guildford about the people who were so accused?
Well, no, I didn't, but I had to get to know my client and understand the nature of his case. He had a Belfast accent, which was very strong, and it was about 4 weeks before I could understand more than one word in three. But as I got to know him, I became more and more convinced that he was innocent and that he'd been fitted up for this.
Now, when you say fitted up, at what stage do you think the fitting up began? I mean, they were picked up, obviously, and along with Annie Maguire, there was a whole complex of wrongdoing, I suppose. But who was responsible? Was it the Crown Prosecution Service or the police?
It was initially the police. They engaged in intimidatory tactics. They physically assaulted the Guildford Four. They abused them verbally, calling them murdering Irish bastards. They hung Paddy Armstrong out of a second floor window and threatened to drop him unless he confessed to the Guildford bombings. In Jerry Conlon's case, they were able to describe in detail the route his mother took to get to her work at night, and told him that unless he confessed to the Guildford bombings, his mother might have an accident. In the case of Paul Hill, they threatened to charge his pregnant girlfriend with the Guildford bombings if he didn't confess. And then they played Russian roulette, dry firing a pistol through the flap of the cell door. And he then confessed. And in the case of Carol Richardson, she was high on drugs when she was arrested. She became hysterical. They called in a police doctor. He gave her a massive dose of medication, which was designed to reduce her hysterical condition, with the result that she made confessions and had no memory of making them after that.
Now, your clients, when you got to talk to Paddy Armstrong, obviously he recounted some of these affronts and offences to you. At which point did you say this guy definitely had nothing to do with the Guildford bombing?
I was convinced by the time that they were sent for trial that they were innocent. What we didn't have, of course, was the information that we needed to show why the police knew that they were innocent, because we just didn't have that information.
And so they
acquired it.
Yeah. So they were convicted. Why did it take so long to expose that information and finally get them vindication?
Okay, so what happened was that the an active service unit of the IRA was arrested in December 1975 in Balcombe Street. They, on arrest, when they were questioned by the Metropolitan Police, confessed to doing the Guildford bombing. The Metropolitan Police never gave that information to us. As a result, they were then put into custody, and I received a letter from Joe O'Connell, who was the senior member of the active service unit, asking me to come and see him. When I came to see him, he told me that he had told the police that they had done the Guildford bombing. So I then made arrangements to interview the active service unit and a man called Brendan Dowd, who was part of that active service unit at the time. And I got confessions from them because the police had absolutely failed to follow up on those confessions and had made no attempt to go and interview them. And that, of course, included the Surrey police, who were perfectly well aware of these confessions. So then we went on appeal. We went to the Court of Appeal. The Balcombe Street Active Service Unit and Dowd gave evidence in the Court of Appeal. And the Court of Appeal decided that the Balcombe Street and Dowd had done the Guildford bombing, but they had done it with the Guildford Four when there wasn't a single shred of evidence to show that there was any connection between the Balcombe Street unit and the Guildford Four. And indeed, as we were subsequently able to find out, there was plenty of evidence that they weren't.
So this was a massive setback to fail on appeal. How ultimately did you succeed?
We ultimately succeeded because we persuaded people of the innocence of the Guildford Four, and Cardinal Basil Hume put together a deputation that consisted of two former Home Secretaries, Lord Jenkins of Hillhead and Lord Merlin Rees, and two law lords, Lords Devlin and Scarman. And they went through the evidence with a fine tooth comb, and they presented this evidence to the Home Secretary and said, this is a case of where the case must be sent back to the court for retrial. The Home Secretary discussed the matter with Maggie Thatcher. Thatcher said, over my dead body, are you going back to the court? But eventually, the Cardinal Archbishop told the Home Secretary that if he did not send the case back to the Court of Appeal, then they would take the gloves off. And when, again, the Home Secretary refused to do it, the two law lords wrote a legal opinion, which was published in the London Times at the end of November 1986, which set out how the conviction was in error and why the case should have to go back. And as a result of that, the Home Secretary sent the case back to the Court of Appeal.
And in 1989, they were released. I mean, this was another example of the appalling vista that Lord Denning could not contemplate in the case of the Birmingham Six.
Yes, I mean, it showed all hands to the pump to defend the criminal justice system. And it also showed a huge amount of antipathy towards Irish people. It showed that the police were able to commit crimes in order to secure the convictions. I mean, after all, if you talk about a miscarriage of justice, most people will tell you that what they think it is something that has gone wrong. Indeed, the current chair of the Criminal Cases Review Commission says it's when the justice system makes mistakes. There were no mistakes in this case. The police committed crimes in order to secure those convictions. So the convictions were the result of the criminal behaviour of the police and the prosecuting authorities. And if you want to know, the law officers of the Crown were up to their necks in it as well, because the current, or the man who was the Director of Public Prosecutions at the time, Norman Skelhorn, was recorded as having told a law conference at Harvard University in 1973 that when dealing with Irish terrorists, any methods were justified.
So the question really is, if the police could do this with impunity, and indeed the Crown Prosecution Service and others, including the Home Secretary, could turn a blind eye to real evidence that was offered, just how high up did the cover-up go?
It went to the judges in the Court of Appeal. They made a decision which was completely wrong in deciding, when there was no evidence to support it, that the Balcombe Street Active Service Unit had done the Guildford bombings with the Guildford Four. No evidence was before the court for that.
But judges are supposed to be independent. Is there any way that they got their instructions from Downing Street, for example, to make this finding?
I don't know. I don't think Downing Street had anything to do with it, except insofar as the Home Secretary was very reluctant to send the case back in due course. But what you have is all hands to the pump. You have everybody working to protect the justice system when an error has been made. And what the result is, Pat, and this is really the issue which would affect most people, and indeed particularly the relatives of those who died and those who were injured in the explosions, the real culprits were never put before a court, charged and convicted, notwithstanding the fact that I obtained from them full confessions. Those confessions would have got them convicted.
Now, that casual meeting way back when you were asked to take on the case of Armstrong P that day, and reluctantly you took it on because there was no one else to do it, it in fact changed the course of your life, did it not?
Well, I'm in my 51st year of this case. We still haven't got to the bottom of it. We're still trying to prise open the papers that the Home Office has concealed and is intending to conceal until the end of the current century. The case is not closed.
It's extraordinary. And at the Don Wycherley Show, Paddy, The Life and Times of Paddy Armstrong, which will be taking place at the Pavilion Theatre as part of a nationwide tour, you will be present for a discussion thereafter.
Yes, and I would urge people to go and see it. It is an incredibly good performance. It's very funny. It's also got a great deal of information available, and it will give a good idea of what kind of a man Paddy Armstrong is. He's a great man, and he deserves a great deal of credit. He's not bitter. He never came out screaming that he wanted the blood of those who put him inside for 15 years. He's behaved absolutely spot on. He's a married man. He's brought up two children. He's a stunner. Ireland should be very proud of people like Paddy Armstrong.
And that's Alistair Logan, the solicitor for the Guildford Four. Tickets for Don Wycherley's one-man show, Paddy, The Life and Times of Paddy Armstrong, are available from the Pavilion Theatre website. And don't forget that Alistair Logan is attending next Saturday for a discussion, a Q&A, after that performance.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.